That's poetry. That's great. Okay, I want to thank the panelists. Now we're going to get to your questions. I'm going to ask them short, and we're going to get real short answers so we can go bang, 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 bang. What's being done to allow Al Jazeera English to be seen more widely in this country and cable? What should people in this room do real fast?
Is this working? Okay, yes. Very quickly. First of all, feel free to talk to Sophia Qureshi, who's representing the PR team. She can give you more detailed advice. But it's worth mentioning that I really believe, and I think Al Jazeera believes, that change is best when it comes from within, whether we're talking about politics or anything else. So one thing we've done is we've created a website called demandaljazeera.net, where you can just go in, and it's extremely easy, and you just put in your zip code, and it automatically sends, and which cable provider you have, and it automatically sends a letter to your cable provider. And we've recently, I think, received 60,000 or something in that number, and we took them to Comcast because Comcast insisted that we stop sending them. They're one of the cable providers. So we actually boxed them. The head of our news division went, and that's how we're participating. But I think the quick answer is that we're leaving it up to you to demand it.
And the website is demandaljazeera.com.
Yes, .net.
.net, I'm sorry, demandaljazeera.net. Okay. Real fast, maybe start with, oh, go on.
Well, I'll get to it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, you can access our live stream on Facebook, on YouTube. There's many platforms, and it's very easy to just take the embed code, and you can embed it either on your blog. And I think what's more important to mention in terms of how you can watch it is, You can watch it currently on Dish TV as well as DirecTV. And I know that, you know, we're here to talk about independent journalism, but we have people like freespeech.org, which are broadcasting us and other, you know, community accesses. So it's great. We're very encouraged by that. And that's why it's an honor, frankly, to be here.
And let's thank freespeech.org again. Okay. Let's pass the mic to Sharif and go real fast down the table. There's a series of questions that all similar. What is or should be the plan for the independent media to penetrate middle America to counteract balance corporate networks, Fox News? Is there a way to use mainstream media to increase the awareness of independent news media outlets? Someone asked, how does each group get their money? I'd like you to real fast summary for each of your institutions. Are you growing? What are some reasons you're growing? Where are you getting your money?
Well, I joined Democracy Now! In 2003 at the start of the Iraq War. Back then, we were airing on about 112 stations. Right now, Democracy Now! Is airing on 950 stations. So I think there's no question that Democracy Now! Is continuing to grow. We continue to add stations every week, and I think it's because there's a hunger out there for real information, and the corporate news networks are just getting worse in their kind of soundbite and just highly visually produced journalism. So I think it's certainly growing.
One way I think that we can get attention to independent media to middle America better is to insist that mainstream media source the people who first broke the story. So if Al Jazeera tells a story first, we need to call up and tell NBC, you better give them credit for breaking that story. And that carries on to every level of, because at that point they're going to be embarrassed and they're going to start including, you know, Al Jazeera on their cable channel. Fire Dog Lake is completely member support. Well, we have some ads, but they're not paying the bills. So we're primarily member supported. We're making a big effort right now to try and shore up that by doing kind of NPR type membership, because it's increasingly clear that even within the progressive community, the powers that be don't necessarily want us to be able to have long-term funding from institutional sources. So if you want to become a member of Fire Dog Lake, just go to the website and join.
And when you were live blogging, Marcy, from the Scooter Libby, Fire Dog Lake was getting quoted and mentioned in mainstream dailies. Am I correct?
You know, they used me as the live stream. They used me as the equivalent of the AP for that trial, and some of them admitted it to me off the record. But they only about three or four people actually were saying Fire Dog Lake is kind of the live stream coming out of the trial. And on fundraising for that one, all we did before we covered the trial was said, we need $16,000 to pay for our apartment and for some flights to D.C., and we raised it overnight. I told that to the general counsel from the Washington Post, and he almost cried to know how much less we had spent on what ended up being the definitive coverage of the trial compared to what they were spending being in D.C. So We do it on a shoestring, okay. But we do use our money that we get from members and from supporters very cautiously.
Derek.
Well, I just want to second what you said about demanding mainstream media sourcing the people that they got the story from, like the stories that I mentioned about Sangin and Gardez. The mainstream media just kind of grabbed the great stuff that was done and then didn't source it, which was kind of terrible. But I also, this is going to sound very basic, but I want to encourage people, if you want to get independent media to penetrate your hometown and your circle of friends, to become active users of social media and not just follow people. For example, if you follow facebook.com/rethinkafghanistan, we're always posting stories and videos, but I think it's critical not just to get those in your news feed, but to also hit the share button so that the people inside your social networks see the same thing you're seeing, and it kind of breaks their silos because you're their friend, but they may not always agree with you politically, but they're going to see it when you share it. The same thing on Twitter, like twitter.com/afghanistan.docu. Don't just get those feeds, hit retweet, so your friends that may not have like the same focus that you have on issues see the things coming out that you're seeing from shops like Rethink Afghanistan or Al Jazeera or Fire Dog Lake or Democracy Now, and it breaks their silo. The other thing is, I know it sounds basic, but you really have to support financially independent media, because we don't attract major advertisers or things like that as our business model. We almost all of us rely totally on public support, and by public I mean your donations. So just make sure that you support us.
I'll just very quickly say two things. One, you know, a lot of people have been saying recently, and it's really nice to finally hear, I'll be very frank, you know, oh, Al Jazeera is amazing, oh, you guys, your coverage great, you know, and it's great. But one thing I think that Hillary Clinton conveniently highlighted is, I think the reason that everyone, or those people who haven't been familiar with Al Jazeera before, are now watching Al Jazeera is not entirely, I should say, because Al Jazeera is doing, you know, things that no one has ever done before. I mean, I think we do offer a different perspective, and we do, I mean, you know, our news is great, but it's more importantly that there's a real problem in this country, you know, in terms of the mainstream media. And she said it, and it's on our website, and you can go see it. You know, it's our biggest endorsement, and it's great, and hopefully it'll help. But another thing I wanted to say is about the stream, because I will shamelessly plug the show. But it's important because, on your point, like, the whole concept and the whole premise behind the stream is that it's really about independent journalism, or it's also about independent, you know, for lack of a better word, activism, or independent anything. And the idea is that it's a talk show, and it's going to air starting on April 18th. Online, and then May 2nd it'll be on TV on Al Jazeera for those of you who can access it. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, it's really structured around the idea that everybody and anybody who has something interesting and relevant to say, and who's consistently, it's important that they're consistently participating in conversations online or wherever it might be in the independent journalism world, will be on the show, whether in the studio or on Skype. And I really mean it, like, you know, any of you, and you know, hopefully, and you know, I'd love to have some of the panelists on the show as well. But the idea is that, you know, Joe Schmo or, you know, Ahmed Mohammed or whatever, you know, could be on the show, and so that's what we're really trying to do. And I really would invite you all to please, especially at the very early stages, please help us and inform us on what you know, so we can do what we're trying to do better. So thank you. It's called The Stream. And so you get stream.aljazeera.com. And yes, that's .com, not .net.
Okay, we have 10 minutes. I'm going to be in The Stream. I'm going to bring my towel and bathing suit. Ahmed mentioned that in the Arab countries, the overwhelming majority of people are under 29. These are questions from and about young people. Does the panel have any advice for young independent journalists interested in reporting on international conflicts? And another, do you see your work with Democracy Now! And as a journalist, this is for the whole panel, as journalist, as a form of activism and social justice work? In your opinion, can journalism be a form of social activism, or does that compromise, quote, objectivity, unquote? That's from a University of Minnesota student and citizen journalist. Who wants to start?
I'm going to answer the last question about objectivity, because I have a PhD in this subject secretly. This notion of objectivity that journalists in this country like to talk about is very limited historically and geographically to the United States. It doesn't exist in most of the rest of the world. And in most of the rest of the world, their press is better than what we have today. The reason we have quote-unquote objectivity in this country is twofold. One is because it was a means to make money. They invented it because you could sell it to anybody. And the second one is because the elite who rely on scraps from the powers that be, like this he said, she said, let's cover it as a horse race rather than what's really going on. So if you're a student, you need to be cautious about endorsing this because you won't necessarily get a job if you go out and start a blog that's very outspoken. And I mean that very seriously, because if you're applying for a job, they're going to look and see what you've done, and when they find that you've endorsed somebody politically, they won't hire you. However, it's important to realize that what you're being taught in your program is very limited to the United States, and it's an increasingly corrupt system.
I think that's great. One thing I just to shore that up is if you're wanting to do your own independent journalism and you have a social activist bent, like just to reinforce what you said, you don't want to try to be he said, she said. You want to be honest and fair. And that's what reporting should be focused on rather than just taking two sides who disagree and reporting what they say. Now, as far as the question of your objectivity and how that compromises you, be upfront. If you have a perspective, make sure that's well stated. For example, this is kind of a failure of military intelligence. I was once mentioned in a military report for my blogging on the Afghanistan war under the column objective and fair, and I laughed pretty hard about that because that made me kind of think they weren't actually reading what I was writing, because I wasn't very nice to the military most of the time because of what was going on in Afghanistan. But I stated my position up front. I made sure if someone disagreed with me, if I represented their arguments, I didn't mischaracterize them on purpose to make it more convenient, and tried to engage in debate. And that, I think, is what a good faith journalist should do and should replace this kind of outmoded idea we have of, like, you can be objective by just letting General Petraeus, who's got millions of dollars behind his PR shop, say whatever he wants, and then let somebody who disagrees with them say something for 15 seconds, and that's objective. So.
Okay. I love this question, and the reason I love it is because this has been something I've battled with at the beginning when I first started and entered the field of journalism. In fact, I quit my job, or I left my job at the New York Times, partly because I was watching things like Democracy Now! And Al Jazeera thinking, why am I not doing that? Whatever that might be, I'll leave it at that. But one thing I quickly wanted to say on the issue of objectivity is, even though this reflects my views, I think it's important to say this. In Time magazine, or in Time.com, the head of Washington Bureau Chief of Al Jazeera was asked the question, about Al Jazeera's point of view and how that fits into what Time referred to as the U.S. idea of journalistic objectivity. I'll only read half of the answer. It'll take 12 seconds, I hope, maybe 22. To be honest, I don't know what objective journalism means. The environment in which you broadcast obviously colors your coverage. If you are an American network broadcasting from the U.S., you will be broadcasting with a sensibility which may not look necessarily objective to an audience in another part of the world. And the same is true if you're a network like Al Jazeera Arabic broadcasting out of the Middle East. But we have to go beyond that, Bob. And then I'll leave it to the last sentence, which is, we cannot live in a world where a story like Egypt, which has consequences for the whole world, is unfolding and your audience doesn't know anything about it or enough about it.
What has objectivity become? We've learned from people, this current staff at FAIR, is in U.S. mainstream media, you place yourself in between the elites of the two political parties and you call that objectivity. So if on issue after issue, the Democrats are proposing solutions that can't possibly solve the problem, whether it's health care, this ridiculous cap and trades on global warming, or even the weak net neutrality, and the other side, the Republicans, have no solutions at all, what is objectivity? It's a spectrum that goes from solutions that can't possibly solve a problem to no solutions at all. And that's what we're fed night after night, and that's what those two are fighting over. That's objectivity. All right, I want to announce something. There's an important panel today at 4, led by Sam Husseini in Cambridge, number one, and it leads to a question we got from the audience. The panel is, can independent media be asking tough questions of politicians? What are the prospects of getting more independent journalists into news conferences? Imagine if serious independent journalists were in the White House newsroom asking tough questions during the buildup of the Iraq War, not just the White House, State Department, Pentagon, Justice Department, etc. That's 4 o'clock today in the Cambridge One room. And Assad Badruddin wrote, how important is it, and this will be our last question, how important is it for bloggers and aggregators of information in the U.S. to have been to the places they cover?
Ask Andy Carvin. I mean, honestly, I don't think it would be great to go. I think obviously there's advantages, and I'm sure Sharif can talk more with Egypt as an example, perhaps, or others who've gone. But, I mean, and part of the whole reason our show hopefully will be somewhat successful is that, you know, you don't have to be in the place with the technologies that we have and with the availability, you know, of those technologies, even in parts of the world where maybe internet penetration is quite low. I mean, internet penetration in Egypt, I think, was something like 18%. So anyway, I'll let the rest of the panelists answer.
Anyone else?
I mean, I certainly don't think aggregators or bloggers have to be where they are, but their primary source of information relies on people who are there. And so we can't forget that reporters on the ground are where everything starts. And so to the extent that people can report from the ground, they should. And you can tweet and blog and do whatever from there. Aggregators, I think, and bloggers are extremely important. I rely on them very heavily, and they also provide analysis of the news. But for the news gathering itself, you have to have the person there.
Forgive me, if I can quickly add, I just realized I have a better answer. One thing that we're trying to do, and one thing that technology is kind of, there's a limitation, is it's really hard to find out where tweets are coming from. It's really hard to find out where even, not blogs, but specifically tweets, Facebook posts even. Geolocation, the technology is not really as sophisticated as perhaps we'd like. Because if I could guarantee that when someone inputs in their profile that they're actually in Libya or they're actually in Tunisia or Sidi Bouzid or whatever, it would be really helpful. And that's not always the case on Twitter, which is somewhat unfortunate. I think, though, it's evolving, and I would imagine that that would be helpful because it is obviously important to be speaking to people on the ground.
Okay, I want to thank our panel. Sharif Abdel Qaddous from Democracy Now! Marcy Wheeler of Fire Dog Lake. Derek Crow, Brave New Foundation. Ahmed Shihab El-Din from The Stream and Al Jazeera. Thank you all.